The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome to Hot Take Tuesday with the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I'm Charlie Smith, rejoined by Jeremy Schilling and Terry Cushman. Jeremy, why don't you lead us off with our first hot take?
So this comes from us from a big-time friend of the program, Johnny Fontaine, who you can find at Johnny Fontaine, F-O-N-T-A-N-E-1. Johnny states the Bregman signing was so John Henry could post a stupid cigar pick and get fans off his back. He is not committed to fielding a sustained championship caliber team. Now, the key word here in this tweet is the word sustained. And if you listen to the recap of the Rangers series, Terry hit on this, that there's no long-term money committed. And so Johnny, as the one reply says, facts. This team is built to, I think, give it a shot this year and really commit to nothing more long term. Bregman is going to opt out if we don't field a good team or if he performs the way he thinks he's going to perform. Now, with all that said, there are two things that could happen any moment that could change my opinion. Number one, signing Crochet to a long-term extension. That will show that they have an eye towards sustained success. The other, on a lesser note, is Campbell, after his big game on Saturday, was widely reported that was in late-term talks or back-end talks on a long-term deal. And if that's the case, then on a lesser level, that would convince me that they're seeking sustained success. But to have sustained success, you have to have top-end pitching. We have no money committed beyond Bayo, who's currently hurt. So if you want John Henry, speaking to you, if you want us, the fans, to be convinced that you give a bleep about winning, you have to go pay Crochet. Has to be done. I don't care about a deadline. Dollars talk. If you pay him what he wants, he'll sign so he has that lifelong financial freedom. So, Johnny, for now, I think you're right, and I agree with you, but there are things that could happen in the very near future that change my opinion.
Terry.
I don't really agree with Johnny here. I don't know if the path to winning, you know, perennially year after year is going to be exactly the way I'm mapping it out in my head, but I think we are built to win. And a big part of it was this weekend with Christian Campbell, who, by the way, as we touched on in the closing minutes of the previous episode, he's looking at a long-term extension here, which will probably be for, I'm guessing, 8 years with one or two options on there, but at least 8 years of his career here in Boston. And I mean, what a weapon from the right side of the plate where we don't have a lot of offense. I mean, you've got Bregman for at least a year. And if he crushes it this year and that money comes off the books, now you can reload. And I think they will. I think they'll go get a bat. Vladimir Jr. hasn't signed an extension yet, so maybe that could be a viable backup plan if Bregman isn't back next year. But, you know, Trevor Story, I don't know what his future is as soon as Campbell comes up, but that's a right-hand bat you can't rely on. We're kind of hoping Connor Wong will be pretty serviceable from the right side, but that remains to be seen. So, you know, I just think Christian Campbell is going to be an absolute weapon in that five or six hole. I think Duran is going to be an all-star this year. I think Casas will figure it out. The question to me with him is health, and can we keep the circus act, you know, not at the forefront, but this is a team that's built to win. You've got Houck for a while, hopefully Crochet for a while. You have them through next year regardless, but I don't see how you could be anything less than optimistic here.
So I'm going to say that, to Johnny's point, Johnny said sustained, and that's something that Jeremy brought up. And I don't think that was just because that buzzword, you know, kind of tickled the lawyer here. Sustained means longer than 2 years, which is what we have with Crochet. And after arbitration for most of these guys, there's nothing committing them. That's not sustained success. You can't say that it's sustained if you have someone, you just traded for a guy, but you haven't committed to him long term. That's not sustained success. That's success for the time that he's here, which is going to be for a couple cups of coffee, an omelet, maybe like a gourmet like meal on Friday night, maybe a fun weekend. That's what it feels like. Until I know that Garrett Crochet is going to be celebrating his 30th and 32nd and 34th birthday as a member of the Boston Red Sox, I'm inclined to agree with everything that Johnny said here. You gotta sign some of these players. And I don't want to hear this this stuff with Christian Campbell of we're in the later stages of signing an extension, because I was thoroughly impressed with the Seydon Rafaela signing. I know that last year, the three of us had this conversation about Seydon, and I don't remember exactly how it went, but Jeremy and I were on one side and Seydon was on the other, Terry, you were on the other about Seydon, and it was about the contract and giving credit, right? I wasn't at the line. It was something along the giving credit to ownership for actually giving him that extension. You could have done it. You didn't do it, but the deed was done. I still have an expectation, as I believe Jeremy and most of Red Sox Nation do, that Seydon Rafaela is going to exceed the expectations of that deal. So Crochet and Campbell and Anthony and Mayer obviously wants to be in Boston. He felt that he did enough during the spring training for 2025 to actually get a spot on this team. Didn't get one. I think he's peeved by it. But I'm curious, like, if any of these players do sign long-term and do commit to the Boston Red Sox, would that change the tune? Would any of these players actually be playing in Boston right now? That's not necessarily the case, because Campbell, while he's in the later stages, it hasn't happened yet. And I don't believe it either has or it hasn't. You can tell me later stages until you're blue in the face. It looked really good that Juan Soto was going to be a member of the Boston Red Sox until he wasn't. So back to that point of sustained success, there are teams out there that are committing 8-9 year deals, 12 year deals, 14 year deals to players. That's like, okay, we're building a team around this guy. And right now we've got Devers, we've got Seydon as our only two bats. Other teams have 3, 4, 5 committed for the next 5, 6 years. We don't. And so, yeah, Jeremy's itching. so yeah, I'm very aligned with Jeremy and Johnny on this one. Sustained has to mean you're giving long-term contracts to more players. And right now we only have a couple. Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah. And Terry brought up Houck. I don't give Houck's on his rookie deal. They haven't committed anything to Houck.
I don't think they have either to Houck.
So it's just like, that you're lucky you drafted him, developed him, and he's in the bigs, but until they sign him, they haven't done bleep. And I only, and then I'm done, Terry. I only see him as a three. He's not certainly not an ace. He's not a stopper. So I view him as a three on a good team, a World Series type team, but I don't see him as a one or a two where you're going to rely on him to stop a losing streak or go out and give you seven in a must have it game. I don't see that from him.
One more thing too, also to add really quickly, Terry, signing players for 2-3 years where the first season they don't pitch because they're recovering from injury is not sustained success. That's just a waste of money. And I wish I was a professional baseball player that could get paid $10 million to not play 1 year. That'd be awesome. It'd be great. I could retire.
Yeah. So just a little bit of clarity on Tanner Houck. He is he's got this year and then two more years beyond this under control. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's super imminent. He does turn 29 years old in June. So he won't even be a free agent till age 32 roughly. So I'm not real worried about him. I don't disagree. I mean, he does kind of profile as a middle of the rotation guy, but he's still a guy that will give you a chance every time out, and I'm good with that. You need a crochet type guy long term. You're going to have to put somebody in the Bueller spot, but eventually guys are going to get developed. And Richard Fitz in the finale of the Texas Rangers series looked okay. He had the bases loaded, no outs, and he just buckled in. He settled down. He didn't lose his composure, and he held them to just one run, which you will take in that situation. I'm becoming a bigger fan of Fitz every time out, and I think he can handle it. He's like Tanner Houck. He's just kind of has that cool as a cucumber demeanor, and you know, he doesn't look like he's having a panic attack out there. So I like that. And you know, with Johnny's take, getting back to it, I mean, it's almost like you're assuming that Roman Anthony isn't going to do anything this year, and that Marcelo Meyer won't do anything. Those two guys can come up and be beasts for all we know. And Anthony hit a home run this weekend in, I think it was in Jacksonville or something, with the AAA club, either way. And you know, Meyer was quoted over the weekend saying, "Hey man, I had a monster spring. Why did they send me down?" You know, I mean, he wasn't butthurt about it, but he was mildly disappointed he didn't make the team despite being the best of them all. And then, like I said, Campbell is just, as Jeremy likes to say, an electric factory. So I think the future is bright as far as the lineup goes. You need to solve the rotation, but I think the darkest days are behind us. Let's put it that way.
So Terry, how I read Johnny's take is not drafting and developing people. That's player personnel stuff. This was about ownership, supporting the cleansing the roster with money and free agents. And so if I have that right from Johnny's perspective, I don't see ownership beyond this season signing Bregman effectively to what everyone believes is going to be a one-year deal unless he gets hurt, having the dollars behind sustained success. I agree with the player development. From a positional player perspective, we're in a good spot. But Johnny's point is, that's great if we're scoring 6.5 runs a game, but are we going to sign a top-end ace to anchor the rotation? Are we going to supplement that in the two spot with a lefty, or you know, or a good complement to what the ace is? And I agree with Johnny. I think the future is bright from a player development circumstance, but I have no trust still that John Henry is going to go do what needs to be done to supplement the club and make sure that not only are we looking to win this year, but in the 2 to 3 years that are in what those players, you know, prime. So if I have the spirit of Johnny's tweet correctly, I still agree with it. But like I said, I think if they spend on Crochet, if they spend on Campbell, maybe even one more of the big three, I would back away from that take.
Well, one last thing, and you know, I'll rest as far as this part of the hot take goes, but we are over the luxury tax, and I don't ever want to be the Dodgers or even the Mets and blow past it. I'd rather be smart. That way we can still draft strongly and all that. So I mean, if we're at or above the luxury tax, you know, not like blowing past it, to me that's an honest effort. Like I'm okay with that. What we did last year was extremely unacceptable, you know, cutting payroll, signing trash, not addressing needs during the winter or at the deadline. You know, though, I think those days are done. That's all I'm getting at.
I think for this year, they made an honest effort.
Yeah.
This year, period.
a lot more this year than they had in the prior years. I don't think anyone's going to dispute that. I mean, the addition of Garrett Crochet is an exponential improvement for this rotation for this team. You know, anything else we want to add to that one? All right, cool. So the second hot take we have comes to us from Precursor Red Sox at Red Sox underscore Precursor. Rafi Devers will hit 30 homers and have 100 RBIs by the end of the season. Yeah, man, absolutely. After a rock bottom start to the year, I absolutely believe that this is a bottom, like, this is like the floor for him, 3,100. This is a 4,110 guy minimum. And if he can rebound quickly, I absolutely see him hitting 30 home runs and 100 RBIs. He obviously didn't get this done last year. He was dealing with a couple of injuries. And, you know, I'm not going to talk about the fact that he's already set the record for the most strikeouts to start the season in a four-game set. This is a guy that's had 30 home runs three times in his career, has had 100 RBIs three times in his career. Each season he had 30 home runs, he's had 100 plus. He's been able to hit over 300 once in his career, but I definitely believe he can do it again. It's been an ugly start, but absolutely, I wouldn't say is a hot take, more like a prayer that we only see that as the floor and he's able to elevate his game from here. Terry, go ahead.
The worst year of Devers' career, 2018, he hit 240 and on base just under 300. He did hit 21 home runs and drove in 66. So that's the worst year of his career. He's been pretty robust since then. At face value, I'll agree with the hot take. Yeah, he'll be a 3,100 guy, but is my confidence a little shaken by the developments of the last few months? Yeah, a little bit. I mean, this is uncharted waters. He's trying to handle a situation that he's not happy with. At face value, he's saying the right things. He looks like he is trying. Like, he did end off the series against the Rangers on a good note. You could see him in the box trying to figure it out, trying to put the ball in play. He's not there yet. Hopefully with Baltimore here, like we were saying in the series preview, you know, he'll get his first hit of the year. But I hope he does. I hope he crushes it far beyond, you know, 30 home runs and 100 runs batted in. So I don't know. And, you know, we've got a person chiming in literally the second that says they'd love to see Devers gone. That's the other part of the uncharted waters here. Like, there's a lot in play. You've got your pro Devers people and your anti Devers people. Then on the other side, you've got your pro Cora people, your anti Cora people. Then you've got your hardcore Bregman people that just don't like Devers. There's a lot of factions in this drama here. And I have no idea how it's going to play out, but if Devers gets a chip on his shoulder, starts crushing it, it's all going to go away. I can't envision a future with Devers being one of the most clutch guys really of the last 5 years. You can't trade Devers. He has to be a part of this team. He has to be hitting in your 2, 3, or 4 slot. And you're going to be a much better organization, you know, with him doing that. So, but this story could take some crazy twists and turns, you know, as we were just highlighting with one of our listeners here.
Yeah. So for me, the biggest thing here with getting to the 100 RBIs is where he's hitting in the lineup. Right now he's hitting second. He's only going to get an RBI in the first inning if he hits a home run. So I think that the 100's a little bit more difficult to achieve this year, given that. However, I think he's going to swing the bat well enough to do it. I'm not worried in a big picture about Rafael Devers. I'm just not. And then from his second at bat on, I mean, he's got nothing but blazing speed in front of him. Rafaela, Duran, obviously. But it's not just that. This team runs well. Hamilton, electric factory on the bases. Campbell can run. Wong can run. Abreu can run. Bregman, as you saw on Sunday's game, can steal a bag and run. The only two people who can't really run that are going to play every day are Casas, who is a stop sign, and Devers himself. So I'd like to see him hit four on this team and have an opportunity to come up in the first with a couple people on base. And then I think he could get to 100 RBIs.
Yeah. I mean, not seeing 3,100 for somebody like Devers, the only explanation for something like that would be he was injured. There's no way that somebody with that kind of power and ability is not hitting 30 homers and 100 RBIs in a season. They're just, that's got to be bar none. That's the bottom. Everything, it just goes up from there. And we've seen him do it before. He can definitely do it again. Terry, you look like you want to say one more thing.
Yeah, I mean, are we married to Devers in the two hole? I know by batting him there, he's going to get a number of at-bats more than he is in the three hole, but you do have him and Duran as lefties hitting back to back. And I personally think Bregman profiles better as either a two hole hitter or a five hole hitter. He's fine. It's not going to hurt us with him hitting third or fourth, but I just don't think that's the type of hitter he is. So maybe you bump Bregman up into the two hole. Devers hits third. And then if Campbell keeps this up, you bat him fourth, Casas fifth. Who knows how it's going to play out, but I hope there's an open-mindedness to see how this roster kind of gels in the coming days and weeks.
Devers hitting second to me is the nerds and the analysts saying this is what's best for the team. It doesn't feel like we're in my mind, in my 40 years of baseball, like it just doesn't seem right that you watch him hit, you see the power, all fields. He seems like a four hitter to me. So this feels like an analyst decision and the data and not, you know, the eye test.
This to me feels like a fear tactic. Like, oh my God, we're 1-3 to start the year. Let's give Devers as many opportunities as possible. Like the Los Angeles Dodgers have Shohei Ohtani batting first. Do you think Shohei Ohtani's a leadoff hitter? Absolutely not. But yet they're doing it. So you want to have Devers bat leadoff? You want to set that trend? Dodgers won a World Series by having Shohei bat first. You think if the Red Sox have Devers bat first, that's going to translate to immediate success? Or it's going to all of a sudden fix the situation? Exactly. You're shaking your head. Like, I'm 100% with you. I don't think you should be batting second just after four games. I really don't think we should be tinkering with things like the batting lineup with Devers. And I don't like the idea of Duran and Devers hitting back-to-back. I'm not a fan of it. That is going to bring us to our third hot take. Terry, why don't you take it away?
So I am going to go with one from kind of a friend of the program. He has co-hosted sporadically and helps out during the winter when we tinker with the Twitter spaces. But Jim Delfino says the New York Yankees have more home runs than the Red Sox have hits. And statistically, that's not accurate, but the gist of it is, the Yankees are kind of firing on all cylinders here. They had, what, 9 home runs in Saturday's game, 4 on Sunday. And it was controversial because it was kind of discovered that the Yankees were using a newer style bat. And these bats, I haven't read the specifications on them, but they taper and they get thicker where the batters make contact, you know, with the barrel and then they thin out at the very end of the bat. And so a lot of people, myself included, kind of interpreted this as, oh, they're cheating. They're trying to do stuff, but apparently the league knew about it. The Red Sox even had those exact bats in camp. I don't think everyone messed with them. Chris Cotillo had that, so you can probably get more in-depth stuff about it from him and the Mass Live crew. But so it's kind of out there. And notably, though, Aaron Judge wasn't using one of those bats. They call them torpedo bats, actually. So, but other players were using them. I think Volpe was one of them. Trent Grisham, and
the entire lineup used that bat.
Well, Judge didn't though, and that's the key thing. He had four home runs in those 2 days. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Judge did not use them. But here's my take on it though. I don't want to see them radically change stuff. 2017 through 2019, the balls were juiced. Hitters got one-dimensional. It just became an all or nothing game, strikeouts or home runs, and that's just not compelling baseball. You know, I like seeing players hitting doubles, triples, you know, and singles, and then legging them out. I mean, the Red Sox stole a ton of bases this weekend, and unfortunately, it didn't really translate to a lot of runs. But I want to see players playing the game in the most dynamic way possible. So if we're radically changing the equipment to induce more home runs, I don't think that's a healthy thing. So if, you know, if the trend goes upward sharply in that direction, I hope the league steps in and says, hey, you know, maybe these bats aren't really in our best interest and we're going to go back to the more traditional style of equipment.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
When's the last time that you saw a team hit 9 home runs and then 5 home runs back to back? Like 14 home runs in 2 games. That seems just a little exorbitant. Charts. Like that's passed off the charts. Like some teams don't hit 14 home runs in a week. They don't hit it in 10 days, right? You might just fall into like a bad stroke of luck. And I will not say that the Yankees are cheating, but I will say that they are bending a rule and interpreting a rule in a matter that no other Major League Baseball player or baseball organization has ever done in the 120 plus years that this sport has been a sport. So they're bending a rule. And here's the thing. In other sports, what they'll do is they will say, okay, you can use this for the rest of the year, but next year, torpedo bats are banned. Like, you're not going to be able to get that bat ever again. I'm not going to say that Aaron Judge is the type of guy that is not capable of hitting 3 home runs. He's clearly capable of hitting 3 home runs, but he's capable of hitting 3 home runs. Then you got Bellinger hitting a home run. You had 3 home runs on 3 pitches to start the game. Now, the argument that you're probably going to get from the, you know, the truthers that think, oh no, the bat had nothing to do with it. You're facing a very, very familiar person. You know what he throws. You know how he does it. He's not grooving anything, you don't think. But you kind of sit there and take a step back, like, wait a minute. Well, depending on where you hit that bat and depending on the extra wood in a different place, what's the difference between that and a corked bat? You fixed the bat. A corked bat is still the same size as a regular bat. If that bat doesn't split, you never know it's a corked bat. So is there anything else going on with that bat that we don't know? I would love to have one of those crack and see. Or are they not capable of breaking? Will they never break in a spot that allows you to see what's on the inside? You don't know. And it becomes the, was he wearing a buzzer? Was he not wearing a buzzer? It becomes this all over again. And here's the thing. The Yankees have taken liberties in the last 10 years, 15 years. I'm not talking about their fans. I'm talking about their players and ownership. They've made accusations. They've done things to say that they're just trying to prevent other teams from doing things when they're doing it themselves. This is nothing short of the expectation for what I would say is either the New York Yankees or the Houston Astros. I would be shocked if this was another team. But 9 home runs in one game, 5 home runs the next, I bet you they hit 4 or 5 in the next couple games too. And at the end of it, this is going to be the first team in Yankees history with 3 guys that possibly have 40 home runs. And we're just going to pretend like, oh, it was all natural. There was nothing that changed. Because when you hit a ball at the end of the bat on a regular bat, it's going to go in a certain direction. On a torpedo bat, I don't know what's going to happen when you hit it at the end of the bat. I don't know, because the whole bat at the end looks different. Are you going to actually have that ball go into play? Is that ball going to float into left or right field and just turn into a single when it probably would have been either a foul ball or a pop out? There's stuff that we don't know yet about that bat that we're going to be finding out real soon. But so far, the Yankees have absolutely obliterated the Milwaukee Brewers in the last 2 days. 20 to 9, right?
It was a football score by the end of it. Yeah.
Well, it was 12-3 yesterday. I'm actually going to look back because I couldn't remember if it was 20-9. I thought it was 29. 20-9 football score. You are correct. And then follow that up with another football score, 12-3. So you've now outscored your opponent 32-12. Sorry, that's not normal. That's not even close. You're averaging 60. And granted, super small sample size, and people are going to say, oh, you know, that's just two games. If someone scores, you know, 27, you score three the next game, that's a 15 average for two games. I was like, great. So if the Yankees score 10 and 12 in the next two games, thanks, Jorge. I appreciate you, buddy. I looked it up too. I appreciate it. If they score another 20 over the next two games, are we going to continue saying, okay, this is fair? Or do you think Major League Baseball is going to say, okay, you know what? The bats have got to go. It's now become an unbalanced game because of what you guys are doing. Because it's kind of frustrating. It really is. And I'm not coming at it like, I'm not facing any of these guys in fantasy sports. I could care less about your fantasy teams. But for the morality of the game and the kind of goodness of what we have in what is supposed to be a pure sport, that doesn't feel like a pure action in the game. I personally think that bat needs to go. And I'd be shocked. I'd be shocked. If the Yankees hit 5 home runs in the next game without that torpedo bat, I'll totally eat my words. But I bet you they probably don't score more than 7 in the next two games each.
So,
all right, Jeremy.
So, Terry, I agree with you. I don't need to see juice balls and torpedo bats. I think it's bad for baseball. I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I like to see a base hit up the middle and a runner go first to third and put pressure on a defense. Now, Charlie, I could not be more opposed to your take. The bats have been identified as legal. You can look up the rule. There's a maximum barrel dimension. There's a maximum length dimension. There's weight that requirements. The bats comply.
So, I didn't say they were legal.
But you have this overtone that the Yankees have done something that's outside the rules, and you're assuming there's cork in them, which there's no information on. All I can tell you is the bats are legal. And if they were smart enough to get ahead of the curve and use the bats one series ahead of what I would think the rest of the league is going to do, then that's on the rest of the league. And the Brewers could, I don't know, miss more bats. And if the bat's not going to come off the nub at the end of the barrel, go off speed, utilize your changeup, try to get soft contact. The location of these pitches should be home runs, or at least could be home runs. And I look, this is where we're probably always going to disagree. Don't give me the purity of baseball. What a bunch of nonsense. 1919, Black Sox, steroid error, juice ball error. You know, all of it. It all continues. You take the estrogen blocker so that you can take steroids. I mean, it's still going on. Stealing signs, things, banging on trash barrels. The reason why they had to outlaw the Apple Watch in the dugouts, because you could still communicate with people through that. Essentially, they gave into it by even now having the signal in the hat so that the signs can't be stolen. But if you don't tell me that there's some frequency that some teams try and look into. Look, I love baseball. I've loved it since I was like 6 years old. But you can't come at me with the purity of the game. The game in and of itself has a controversy every decade based on finding loopholes. This isn't a loophole. The bat's legal.
I never said the bat was illegal. I never said that there was cork in. I said there could be. We don't know because the bat hasn't broken.
Terry, I'm sorry, not Terry.
I did it too.
Said you had the overtones that this is a cheating scandal. Overtones. I didn't say you said it any other way. I'm just saying, period, the bat's legal. The bat's legal.
I'm not disputing that. The bat is legal. But
it's since it's legal, you can't just change a rule in the middle of the season. You got to get with the MLBA and say, hey, we're going to have different bat dimensions. The bat's going to be here to stay for 2025.
The dimensions aren't the problem. The dimensions aren't the problem. The torpedo bat. So there was a video, and I think I actually posted in the group, and I said, this is interesting because a lot of people are going to be talking about this. The bat is legal. The diameter of the bat, the size of the bat, all of that is legal. It says there was something along the smoothness of the bat, and that could be a different interpretation, right? Smoothness doesn't talk about, you know, the it going, you know, out, kind of bowing out and then bowing back in, you know, like a bowling pin almost, right? So that's different. And now that there's more wood in a different spot, that concentrated area, yeah, sure, miss more bats, absolutely. And like I said, Nestor Cortes is someone that is very familiar with the Yankees. The Yankees are very familiar with Nestor Cortes. But I'm saying it will not surprise me if the Yankees continue on having home run derby against other teams because of this bat. I'm just, again, not an illegal bat. I'm agreeing with you. And I am talking about purity of the game because all that other BS that we just talked about, some of those guys are not in the Hall of Fame because they disgrace the sport. Do I think they should be in? Without them, there were a lot of people that weren't watching the sport. I think you would agree. The Black Sox, that's over, right? The Black Sox, that's over 100 years ago. Your grandparents were not at those games. My grandparents were not at those games. If they were, more power to them, and I apologize. Pete Rose, another one. Did he ever gamble on his own games? He said no. Will we ever know? No. Unfortunately, we can't ask him. We can't send him a text, right? But right now, Apple Watches, banned. Banging on trash cans, banned. Altuve wearing the buzzer, Terry, not able to happen anymore. And I know you're going to fight me and say he didn't do it. You will never be able to convert me on that, ever. But I want to say that when there's an issue, they do a very good job. The MLBPA, the teams will get together and right the wrongs. This one, legally, is not a wrong. Although I will say it is incredibly fishy. It's just fishy and it stinks, man. Like
I'd get Devers a torpedo bat ahead of tomorrow's game. That's all I'm saying.
And if he goes 5 for 5 with 4 home runs, then what do you think Major League Baseball is going to do? Hey, you know what?
It's a rule.
What?
It's a rule. They got to change the rule. They can't just change the rule midseason. They can't add a pitch clock in midseason. They got to play the season. And this isn't the NFL. It's different. The union in baseball is much stronger. All the contracts are guaranteed. I can go on and on.
Right. The bat is going to stay this year. There are other sports where if something is done, or, you know, if you guys watch Formula One, if one team does something, one constructor does something, they're always they're wondering like, okay, cool. Is this legal? Is that not legal? If it's within the rules, they haven't broken the rule. It's not illegal, right? But they've done something. They've interpreted a rule or a law within the rules that says this is not legal. We're going to do this. That's what they're doing. They're talking about a smooth bat as if it just kind of goes in and then out at the end. No, this one goes out and then back in at the end. So it does look a little bit different. Have I ever swung a torpedo bat? No. Have you ever? Maybe you have. I don't know. Maybe Terry has. I don't know. It just, as soon as I saw it, I was like, what are we doing? But this is the 2025 year. I bet, like I said, this year, they will keep it. At the end of 2025, that is going to be a different discussion.
And they can ban it. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just saying.
They won't. They'll have to change. And I'm sorry, Terry, for talking over you. They would have to change the dimensions and legality, as in once the bat goes towards the end, you know, going towards the end of the bat, it cannot start to go back in. They'll have to actually put that in the rule book. Terry, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't think an equipment rule change is as significant as like the pitch clock or something that'll fundamentally, you know, change the game. So perhaps they won't make any changes to rules pertaining to equipment, but nonetheless, here's another thing. What if Trent Grisham suddenly becomes a 3100 guy with this new bat. And then let's say the Diamondbacks just gave $25 million a year to so-and-so who's not quite a 3,100 guy. Now the whole payroll thing is going to get messed with. And the teams are like, well, if I can turn so-and-so into a 3,100 guy when he's normally not, why am I going to blow this much money next winter on this guy? So I think the players union should be concerned about it, possibly. And I'll be curious to see which way this goes, but I don't see a ton of positives with having it like that, with all those categories inflated, home runs, you know, runs driven in.
I agree with that part of it for sure.
Yeah. I just don't see enough positives.
So far, only one team is using it. I'm curious to know what the rest of Major League Baseball, like what other teams, and I'm curious what other podcasters are doing and saying. Like, I'm sure the Yankees aren't even talking about it. The Yankees podcasters aren't talking about the torpedo bats. They're talking about how their players are going off. 29 other teams are talking about torpedo bats.
Well, Judge came out real quick and said, hey, I'm not using it, to hopefully deflect. And, you know, but he says he doesn't need a different style of bat to crush it, and he's just going to stick with his normal stuff.
He's 6'7", yeah. Weighs 275. He could probably, you know, use a Poland Springs bottle and park it, you know? Like, the guy's got insane power and insane torqueage.
So the Yankees are playing the Diamondbacks, and they're at home, but they basically have the Diamondbacks' best 1-2-3. They've got, I think, Burns in the first game. I think it is Burns, then Merrill Kelly, and then Zach Galen. So we'll see what that Yankees offense does against three extremely solid pitchers.
One other person just wrote, Justin Cook just said, Ryan Jeffers on the Twins used one today. How did Jeffers do?
I don't know.
Does yeah,
Justin I'm, know I'm, how Jeffers did?
I'm going to find out right now, because I'm very curious if homie went off, and Jeffers is a good hitter. He might not be the sexiest name.
Four at bats, zero hits. 0-for-4. Torpedo okay. bat did not work for him.
Wow.
Okay.
Torpedo we'll see. Game.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of data on this in the coming days.
Dork. All right.
That was too easy. All right. Well, that's going to do it for all the bastards. Everyone have a great one. We love to interact with our fans. So for all those that were kind enough to leave a comment and join us for this one, everybody have a great one. Take care.